Chapter 17. Sorrows of the Stranger. Slate went over to young couple's house to find more information. When he arrived at the house, he knocked on the door. There was no answer, and he hit it again. Still, he heard a noise like an item was dropped inside, and he grunted. Slate knocked on the door again and shouted, "I know you are in there. Atalon sent me to help with the people hassling you." A few seconds later, the door opened, and a young lady with her hair in a bun, holding her baby, stood behind it. She whispered, "Come in." As Slate walked into the house, the woman politely said, "I will be back in a moment." She went into the room, put her baby down in the cradle. Slate looked around the room. It was very bare. It just had a table, two stools, and a couch. There was no wood in the fireplace, and there were very few candles. This room was much barer than he would have thought for a family. The lady walked in again. "Can I get you anything? We don't have much, but we can offer you some ale, or would you like tea or coffee?" Slate nodded. "Tea, please." Slate looked around the room where the baby was sleeping and asked, "Where is the father?" The lady sighed sadly, her gaze moving to the floor. "Did Atalon not tell you?" Slate needed clarification. "Tell me what?" The lady replied, "Well, he was killed not too long ago by those people you were talking about." Slate's heart sank. The lady continued, as her eyes peeled up, "He was just trying to stop them forcing themselves on me, and one of the men grabbed the bot and flung it on his head, and he died instantly. The people ran off as they were shocked by what happened. But even so, that didn't last long. They started forcing their way into my home." Slate asked, "Is that why this place looks so empty? Is it because of them?" The woman nodded, "Yes, it is. They keep coming here, taking anything valuable I have. Now that everything's gone, they take the only food I have left." She cried, "I'm so worried. There will not be enough food. I would stop before I let my baby go hungry. Unfortunately, he's not old enough to eat solid foods, so I must eat. But I fear it's not enough for a child to grow up to be a healthy boy." She wailed out in panic and grief. Slate was awkward monotonely. He didn't know how to comfort her. He asked, "Can you please tell me where they are staying? Can you please tell me anything about them so I can identify them from the crowd?" The lady nodded and said, "Yes. They wore a brown hooded cloak. The armor they wear has an X mark in the middle." She continued, "Last time they stayed in the Alaran town. I hear them mentioning that town a lot." Slate nodded, "Thank you. I will see if I can find them and get them to leave you alone." Slate left the house and went back to Atalon's dwelling. To Slate's surprise, Loke and Atalon were both still training. After some time, Loke rushed out in the kitchen, breathing heavily and trembling. Loke picked up a glass of water, collapsed on the chair, sighing in relief. Atalon slowly walked into the kitchen. Loke exhaled, "God, that was a tiring training. I learned a lot though." Slate hummed, "Well, you better rest for now, as I will need your help to deal with those bandits harassing the young lady and her baby. They killed her husband," Slate said while glaring at Atalon. Loke nodded, "I will go to bed for now to rest a bit. Can we go after dinner as I'm starving?" Slate nodded. Loke went into the bedroom and Slate stared back at Atalon once he was gone. Atalon shrugged, "I forgot to tell you about the husband's death. But honestly, I wasn't fully sure he was dead. I never saw a body or heard about any funeral. All I know for certain is that she was harassed and rarely left her place. I just assumed maybe that was why I never seen her husband, as he was hiding too." Slate commented,
"Did you know the bandits ransacked her house and took everything she had owned? She's even struggling for food."
Slate moved closer to Atalon, still glaring at him. Atalon was offended and tried to defend himself. "What are you implying, Slate? That I knew all about this and did nothing? Of course not. Slate, do you think that lowly of me? That I would be so selfish to keep my food to myself?" Slate grunted, "Well, I find it hard to believe that you didn't know her husband died after the fact she was attacked, and you did nothing to scare those people away. Maybe that's because you're too frightened. This is because you're too worried about your food supplies running low. So yes, I'm accusing you of exactly that. Slade turned away from Athelon, sat on the stool, and continued. But now that I'm here, I will deal with the problem for you. You are lucky that the woman and child are still alive. Otherwise, it would be on your conscience. Slade got up and rummaged through the kitchen cupboards. He took the food and water and started putting them on the table. Athelon interrupted. Slade, you can't take... Slade glared. And Athelon didn't say another word. Slade continued to gather supplies and put them in the bag and walked out of the house. Once Slade got to the woman's house, he knocked on the door. It is me, Slade. The woman was looking through the side of the door and Slade handed the food to her. Her eyes were watery again and she smiled with pure joy. Thank you, sir. Slade nodded and walked back to Athelon's house. As Slade entered the house, Athelon sounded annoyed. Why did you do that? I need those supplies. I have 3 mouths to feed. Slade glared at Athelon, who walked towards him and said, I knew it. You were just keeping those supplies to yourself and letting that family starve. Athelon retreated as Slade got closer to him. Well, it's not exactly that. I don't want to share. I have you and love to feed. Slade rolled his eyes and turned to walk to the bedroom to take a nap. Oak was shaking Slade eagerly, wearing his gear. As Slade opened his eyes a little, he realised Oak was in his training gear. Instead of grabbing his sword, Slade grunted, rubbed his eyes and said harshly, What do you want now? Oak eagerly replied, Well, it's a good time for us to find the bandits and teach them a lesson. What time is it? Slade grumbled. Oak replied, It's nearly 7 in the evening, perfect time to survey and plan a course of action. Slade scratched his head, trying to understand what Loke just said. Why are you so eager and excited to find the bandits? Loke replied, Well, I think it's exciting and it will be fun. Slade snapped, It should never be fun. It is never easy to take a life or hurt someone, and it should only be done when truly necessary. Unfortunately, it is necessary that we stop those bandits, as a lot more people have been hurt, and more people can get hurt or die if nothing is done. But hurting or killing should never be done for enjoyment. Do you understand me, boy? Loke looked shaken and stared at the ground. Yes, I understand. Slade got out of the bed, changed into warmer clothes. He then grabbed his gear and they both walked towards Sage and journeyed into the forest. After some time, Slade pulled on Sage's reins and the horse stopped. Loke asked, Why did we stop? Slade put his fingers to his lips, signaling for Loke to be quiet. Slade scanned the surrounding area, listening for any sounds. Loke looked at him, eyebrows raised and mounted. Is everything okay? Slade shook his head. It's nothing. I thought I heard something, but it's probably just my imagination. They continued their journey for a bit before Slade stopped again. We will camp here for the night, Slade said, guiding Sage to a nearby cave. Loke was relieved to rest for the night and said, I'm getting tired and hungry. Slade directed him to look for food while he prepared the fire. Loke asked Slade to show him how to make a fire and Slade sighed. All right, I'll show you, but absorb because I won't be showing you again. Slade found 2 dry wood branches and a gigantic pile of dry moss that would serve as fuel. Slade used his sword to sharpen the top of one of the branch and placed the other on the ground, sitting on it to keep it steady. Using the sword, he made a minor crevice down the centre of the branch on the floor, which acted as a tract to guide the other branch. He then used the top of the other branch and moved it up and down in the tract, causing friction. This created smoke and eventually a tiny ember appeared. Slate placed some coal onto the dry moss, loosely covering over the coal to avoid the wind blowing it out. As the smoke level increased, Slate blew lightly into the moss, speeding up the process and creating a fire. Slate looked at Loke. Now, you saw me make a fire. You go off and get some food. Loke nodded and went off. It was a chilly day, the sun went down, and it was getting dark, so Loke walked faster. Loke saw there was a hill nearby. So, he climbed to the top of the hill and walked to the edge for a better view. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw a shadow, or at least that's what he thought he saw. But when he looked in that direction, there was nothing other than plants, trees and flowers. Loke shook his head and looked around again. Loke then saw a deer and moved closer to it, but every time he got near, the deer would hear him and run away. Loke chased after it, but he never got too close, eventually fell to the ground from exhaustion. "Get up, boy. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. You'll never catch any food by lying down and complaining," Slate said when he appeared behind Loke. Loke protested. "I tried, Slate, but the deer always knows when I'm near." Slate laughed. "Well, that might be because you walk like an elephant for your size. Everything can hear you. You need to crouch and move slowly. Even if you are quiet, the fast movements would make you easier to be seen." Loke sighed. "I suppose. But is there something I can do to help?" Slate paused and looked around. Walked to a tree, broke off a few branches and twigs and threw them at Loke. Slate ordered, "Carry them, boy." "What is it for?" Loke asked. "I'll show you. But first we must set up a trap," Slate said, as he returned with a box and some stale food. Slate pushed the box down on the ground, put food inside, and used a stick to hold it up. Loke looked at him, confused. "How on earth are we going to fit a deer in that box?" Slate rolled his eyes.
"No, you idiot. I don't plan on catching something as big as a deer. Maybe a rabbit or something. Anyway, let's go back."
Loke and Slate went back to the cave. Loke brought Sage a bucket of water and some hay and sat beside the fire opposite Slate. With a soft-spoken intensity, Loke looked into Slate's eyes. "Slate," he began, "we spent all this time together, and yet when I truly think about it, I realise how little I know about you." Slate's lips twisted into a smirk as he retorted, "I could say the same about you, Loke." Loke protested, "Not fair, I'm only 14. What interesting tales could I possibly have?" Slate chuckled lightly and invited, "Fine. So what would you like to know?" With an eager beam, Loke unleashed his curiosity. "I want to understand your past better, Slate. I want to know why you're always constantly moving, why you don't have a place to call home, and why you never told me more about your wife." Slate exhaled softly, his gaze distant as Mary stored. While he spoke, Loke leaned in. "Do you remember the tale I told you about the greedy king?" Slate began, his voice in a low murmur. Loke nodded, his eyes widening in anticipation. "Well," Slate continued, "I grew up in that kingdom. I inspired to be the king's head swordsman when I was young. I trained relentlessly and could have easily achieved that dream. But that ambition was shattered when I was a squire. I was selected for a mission in the south region of Exitamol with the other knights and squires. Unfortunately, I fell ill. I couldn't participate despite my sincere wish to do so." Slate's gaze dropped to the ground as he continued his tale. "When the men returned from the mission, they were exhausted, blood-stained, and their faces bore no joy. It was then that I learned the hot truth of their journey. They had been sent to massacre an entire town simply for their inability to pay taxes to our kingdom. The king had disguised the true intent of the mission, painting the town's folk as monstrous. But I had heard the truth from the men's lips." Slate paused for a second, when a tiny sigh escaped his lips as he continued. "After that day, my faith in the king and gods was shattered. My dreams of becoming a skilled swordsman had vanished. As I became more aware of the losses and tragedies around me as the days went on, I felt a dark cloud settling over me. I noticed the poverty, their starvation. Once clouded by dreams and aspirations, the grim reality of life had now opened my eyes. So, I abandoned the kingdom, aimlessly and slightly lost. embarking on a journey searching for a new home. Slate paused, his gaze still on the ground. Then Slate looked up, a wistful smile playing on his lips. Eventually, I reached the village of Laintiff. Exhausted, famished from my journey, I sought the local food merchant. That's when I saw her, my beloved wife. Her politeness, her captivating smile. I was drawn to her instantly, feeling emotions I never experienced. I started visiting her frequently under the pretense of needing food. Though, I think she saw through my lies swiftly, Slate chuckled softly. As the time went on, we grew closer. She wasn't just beautiful, she had a caring heart, which I loved the most about her. Those days were my happiness I've ever known. I found joy overshadowing my previous sorrow. But that happiness was snatched away when she was taken away from me. Her loss was a pain I'd never known, leading me to live alone, to become a nomad. I didn't want to risk such profound loss again. I'm not sure I could bear it. So now you know where I come from, about my wife, and why I don't have a home. Luke's eyes mirrored the sadness of Slate's tale. He spoke softly, I'm truly sorry, Slate. I didn't know, but I understand you better. Thank you for sharing your story with me. Slate nodded, a sad understanding passing between them. The silence that followed was filled with shared grief, neither of them knowing what to say next. Luke exhaled deeply before speaking. I'm sorry, Slate, I didn't get any food. I should have been better. My father spent so much time showing me how to hunt and track. I got so fed up that I didn't take it seriously. It is strange how things work out. Now I know why my father wanted me to learn. It was a survival skill, and I wish I took it seriously. Slate listened to each word, but he was carving the stick, shaping the twigs to have sharp edges. And after a few were made, he got up, grabbed some wire from Sage's saddle. Slate tied the wire around the stick from one side to the other. Once done, Slate handed a handmade bow to Luke, who looked up with a smile and exclaimed, Nice! I have bow and arrows, Slate said. This should help with hunting once you know how to use it effectively. Don't get too near the animals. Once we get back, I will look for a better bow. Luke started looking at the bow and arrow, stretching it out like he was about to shoot. Suddenly, they heard a roar. Slate and Luke got up to their feet and saw a bear approaching. Slate drew his sword, ready to attack, until Luke cried, Leave it alone, please, Slate. This must be the bear's home, and we intruded. Let's sneak past the bear and attack only if we must. Slate nodded, grabbing Sage by the reins, guiding Sage and Luke behind the rocks. They slipped quietly past the bear without being attacked. Now what? Luke's face went pale with the cold. Slate and Luke walked over to the trap and saw it was untouched. Slate said, Let's go, as they hopped on Sage and headed to the bandits' camp. After some time travelling, they camped on another hill. Slate showed Luke how to use the bow and aim. Luke's first try was terrible. He could barely hold the bow and the arrow while he pulled the string. After many attempts of Slate showing him how to do it correctly, Luke hit the target a few times. After training was done, Luke fell asleep from exhaustion. Slate stayed up for a while, keeping an eye out to ensure they were safe. But in the end, he fell asleep next to Sage, with his sword by his side. Once they were fully rested, they headed to the bandits' camp. When they got closer, Slate looked at Luke and the hill and said, Bow to that hill and have your bow ready if something goes wrong. Slate continued, I want to talk to these people first. Luke nodded and went to the top of the hill as instructed. Once Slate saw Luke in position, Slate walked towards the bandits with his arms raised, showing them he wasn't holding his weapons, but knowing they were within arm's reach. When the bandits saw Slate, they immediately drew their swords. One spoke gruffly, What do you want? Slate answered, I hear that you've been to Alentes. I want you to leave here and leave that town alone. The bandits laughed loudly. Why or not will we do that? Just because you told us so? Slate grunted through his teeth a little. Yes, you should. Before you all get hurt, I care for that town and the lady that you harassed. You all even killed her husband. I even thought about giving you this option, rather than killing you immediately, because I don't want more blood on my hands. It is a perfect option, and I think you should take it. The bandit leader yelled, "We won't be going anywhere." Slate, being distracted, didn't see the other man coming from the tent, about to strike at Slate with his sword. But the arrow that Luke shot distracted the bandit. Slate flashed a brief smile at Luke before unsheathing his sword. One of the bandits lunged at him, but Slate expertly dodged the attack by pivoting to the left and redirecting the bandit's sword to the ground. As the sword clattered against the earth, the bandit's sword fell from his grip. Slate swiftly turned and delivered a powerful strike to the second bandit's side, causing him to crumple in agony. Luke saw that the other bandit was about to intervene, so he quickly shot another arrow, but it missed. Luke didn't lose hope and shot another arrow, which hit one bandit in the leg. The wounded bandit leaped towards Luke, who shot yet another arrow, hitting the bandit again in the leg. Finally, the bandit fell to the ground, unable to move. Thrilled with his success, Luke climbed down the hill. Slate walked over to the bandit. You should have taken my kind offer.
Apologies. I'm sorry. We will leave this town as you asked. If you allow us to go, you can have all our belongings.
Slate grunted. Why should I let you go after this? Besides, I will take all your stuff after you are dead. Slate raised his sword to do the final blow. But Luke interrupted.
No, that is enough. Let them go, Slate.
Slate grunted while lowering his sword and grabbed the man by his collar, lifting and shoving him forward. Go before I change my mind. The man nodded and ran away. Luke and Slate gathered the gear and headed back to the town at a faster pace than they did heading up. Slate seemed to be in a rush, but Luke didn't care. He just wanted to be in bed. He was desperately tired. It was dark and quieter than usual when they got to the town. They headed to the woman's house and knocked on the door. The woman again peered through the door and sighed with relief when she saw Slate.
She opened the door and let Slate and Luke in. And just before she was about to open her mouth, Luke interrupted.
Well, the bandits are gone. They won't bother you anymore. And we brought you back some supplies. Slate picked up the food, drinks and clothes and kitchenware and handed them to the woman. We hope this will help you and your child. The woman whispered,
thank you.
As she tried to hand Slate some jewellery, Slate raised his arms and shook his head. No, you keep it. You have been through a lot. Use it to care for the child. They left and returned to Athlon's home to rest for the night.